Ever get that like chilling feeling when you see a cop car pull up and you're just minding your own business?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Your heart kind of skips a beat, right? Like, is everything okay?
Exactly. And as law students, we know it all comes down to this thing, this legal standard of reasonable suspicion, right?
Absolutely. It's the bedrock of so much in criminal procedure, and today's deep dive is all about that.
So we're cracking open this New York case, People v. Pines. It's from 2002, and honestly, it's a game changer for understanding when police can actually stop someone.
It really digs deep into how courts look at these super quick interactions between cops and, well, anyone they might encounter.
Like we're talking a nervous glance, fidgeting, maybe even just deciding to walk away, all that seemingly innocent stuff.
Right, and the court breaks down if those things can actually add up to, you know, legal justification for a cop to stop you.
And to do that, we got to use the DeBoer framework, those four levels of police interaction.
Love a good framework. Always helps make sense of these tricky situations.
Right. And we can't forget about the role of running away, you know, fleeing the scene.
Ah, yes, good old flight. We'll be looking at another case for that one, People v. Martinez. That's key for understanding, like, running isn't automatically guilt, but it can change things depending on what else is going on.
So much to unpack. Let's get into it. All right. Picture this. February 19, 1998. It's late, like around 11 at night, on 152nd Street in Manhattan.
Okay, setting the scene, I like it. But not just any street corner, right?
Nope. The court was very specific. They called this place out as a known drug-prone area, which, you know, already adds a layer of context.
Oh, absolutely. The law recognizes that location matters. I mean, it's not the only factor, but it definitely colors how everything that happens is viewed. Like, these cops weren't just on patrol in some random quiet suburb.
Right, so we've got our location. Now enter our plainclothes NYPD officers, three of them,
Right.
patrolling in an unmarked vehicle.
Undercover style, classic. Adds a bit of intrigue, don't you think?
Totally. So who catches their eye? A man named Robbie Pines.
Robbie Pines. All right, what'd he do?
Well, according to the court records, he was doing a few things. Walking kind of nervously, looking around a lot, and talking to someone else.
Okay, not necessarily criminal. Right. Lots of people walk and talk.
True. But there was one action that really stood out. Pines was seen cupping his jacket with his hand, like he was holding something.
Oh, okay. That's a bit more specific. I can see how that would pique their interest.
Exactly. And, you know, based on their training and experience, those officers thought it could mean he was hiding a weapon.
Makes sense. They're trained to look for those subtle cues.
Yeah.
Like, is this guy concealing something? Could be a drug deal about to go down? Who knows?
So, put it all together, nervous guy looking around constantly, that distinctive hand movement, it all adds up to suspicion. They decide to follow him.
So far, so good. It's like building a case piece by piece.
Right. Now, here's where things escalate. Pines notices these plainclothes officers.
Uh-oh. I'm already feeling the tension rising.
And how does he react? The court uses a very specific phrase, his eyes bulging out.
Huh. Like a deer in the headlights. Not exactly the picture of innocence.
Nope. And it doesn't end there. He then starts positioning himself almost like he's trying to keep his right side away from the approaching officers.
Definitely seems like he's trying to hide something. Maybe whatever's under that jacket.
You got it. Another layer of suspicion added. And then suddenly, Pines makes a sharp turn and walks away from the person he was talking to.
Okay, things are getting a little more suspicious by the second.
Right. The officers, now even more suspicious, they decide to approach. They show their badges and simply ask, "Hey, can we talk to you for a sec?"
Seems pretty reasonable, just a quick chat, right?
You think so?
Yeah.
But Pines' reaction, he bolts, takes off running.
Oh, wow. Flight. Remember what we were saying about People v. Martinez? This is where it comes in.
Exactly. And as he's running, the officers see him toss something into a trash can. Turns out it was a gun.
Of course it was. The
Yeah.
plot thickens.
Right. They chase him down, apprehend him, and recover the weapon. Seems like an open and shut case, right? Gun, suspect, done.
Well, not quite. This is where the legal system really kicks in. Believe it or not, the trial court actually suppressed the evidence.
Wait. They threw out the gun and any statements Pines made. Why?
Yep. Their reasoning was that the police didn't have enough justification to even approach Pines in the first place.
So, in their view, the whole encounter was basically flawed from the start.
Exactly. But hold on, there's more. The appellate division, they reviewed the trial court's decision and disagreed.
Okay, so they reversed the suppression order.
They did. And that's how this whole thing landed in the lap of the New York Court of Appeals. the big leagues.
And their decision is what makes Pines so important. They sided with the appellate division, meaning the gun and everything Pines said was admissible.
Big win for the prosecution, but why? What was the legal logic behind it?
That's where our friend DeBoer comes in. Remember those four levels of police interaction?
Always a fan of a good framework. Breaks it down nicely.
Right. So level one is the most basic. An officer can come up to you and ask some questions if they have a good, credible reason, like something that makes sense objectively.
Very low bar, just a quick, hey, what's up, kind of thing.
Exactly. Level two is where the Court of Appeals decided the officers were at initially with Pines. This is where they have what's called a common law right of inquiry.
Which means?
It means they can ask more pointed, intrusive questions if they have a founded suspicion that something criminal is going on.
Okay, so it's a step up from just a casual chat, but founded suspicion. That's got to be more than just a hunch, right?
Oh, absolutely. It has to be based on actual, articulable facts, something concrete that the officer can point to.
So in the case of Pines, what did the court say gave the officers that founded suspicion?
They pointed to a bunch of things. His nervous behavior, those wide eyes when he spotted the cops, how he held his jacket, and that sudden change of direction. All those little details added together, they painted a picture.
So it wasn't just one thing, it was the whole package, the totality of the circumstances.
Exactly. And remember, the court also considered the officer's experience and training. They're trained to notice these things, you know, subtle cues that might suggest criminal activity.
And the fact that this all went down in a high crime area, I bet that played a role too.
Oh, absolutely. The court definitely took that into account. It's all about context.
Right, right. Okay, so we've got level one, basic questions. Level two, founded suspicion and more pointed questions. What comes next?
Level three is where things get really serious. This is when an officer can actually forcibly stop you, detain you, based on reasonable suspicion.
Okay, a much higher bar than just founded suspicion.
For sure. And finally, we've got level four, the top level probable cause. That's what's needed for an arrest.
The full shebang. So back to Pines, the court decided the initial approach was level two, founded suspicion, but then he ran and tossed the gun. That changes things, right?
Big time. And that's where People v. Martinez comes back into play.
Yeah.
It deals specifically with fleeing from the police.
Right, because running away on its own isn't enough for reasonable suspicion.
Exactly. But Martinez says that if you run after already acting suspiciously, it can push that suspicion over the edge.
So in Pines' case, he was already acting sketchy, and then he bolts. That's a big red flag.
Huge. The courts said that's what bumped it up to reasonable suspicion, which meant the cops were justified in chasing him.
It's like that last piece of the puzzle clicking into place.
Perfect analogy.
Yeah.
And when you look at the court's decision, it really all comes down to the whole picture, the totality of the circumstances.
Not just one isolated thing, but everything together. The nervousness, the hiding, ditching his friend, and then the sprint.
And let's not forget, the officer's expertise and that high crime location, the court weighed all of it.
They even use this cool term, dynamic escalation, to describe how the suspicion built up during the encounter.
Right. Started small, then grew with each of Pine's actions, and finally hit that reasonable suspicion point when he decided to run.
Like a snowball effect. Makes sense. Now, another thing for our law student listeners out there. You got to remember that appellate courts, like this Court of Appeals, they tend to give deference to what the lower courts decided.
Meaning, they usually go with the trial court and the appellate division's findings, especially if the evidence backs it up.
Right. Especially when it comes to this reasonable suspicion thing, it's considered a mixed question of law and fact.
So if those lower courts found reasonable suspicion based on what happened, the Court of Appeals isn't going to overturn it easily.
Unless there's a super obvious legal mistake. They're basically saying, hey, those lower courts were there, they heard the arguments, they saw the evidence, we're going to trust their judgment.
Right. And this brings up a super important distinction. For this stop and pursuit to be legal, the cops didn't need probable cause.
Which is the much higher standard you need for an arrest.
Exactly. They just needed that lower bar of reasonable suspicion. And because the court agreed that they had it, boom, the gun was admissible.
It all hinges on that legal standard. Fascinating how it all plays out. So for all those future legal eagles out there, what are the big takeaways from People v. Pines?
Well, first off, Pines shows us that courts don't just focus on one single action.
It's not like, oh, he looked nervous, that's it, we can stop him.
Nope, it's got to be more. But if you combine nervousness with other stuff, like hiding something, evasive moves, especially in a high crime area,
that can definitely create that founded suspicion needed for further questioning.
Second big point, Flight is a game changer. Martinez made that clear.
Running away isn't automatic guilt, but if you're already acting shady and then take off running, not a good look.
The court's going to see that as a sign that something's up, and that can bump the suspicion level way up,
leading to a lawful stop and pursuit. And lastly, Pines teaches us that courts generally respect how police officers assess things on the street.
Especially if those cops can clearly explain what they saw and heard, and if the evidence supports their story.
Makes sense. They're the ones in the thick of it, making those split-second decisions.
Right. So for our future defense attorneys out there, Pines shows how crucial it is to break down every single part of that police encounter.
You got to challenge everything from the very first moment of suspicion to how it escalated.
And for our aspiring prosecutors, Pines is like a blueprint for justifying stops in high-crime areas.
Especially when you can point to specific behaviors from the suspect that back up the officer's gut feeling.
Pines really gets at the heart of that tricky balance we always talk about. How do we protect individual rights while still letting law enforcement do their job?
It's like walking a tightrope. You gotta make sure cops aren't overstepping their bounds, but also give them the tools to keep people safe.
Pines gives us a peek into how courts navigate that super complex world. And that's what makes it so important for us as law students and future lawyers to understand.
It definitely leaves you with a lot to think about. How do we reconcile our constitutional rights with the realities of policing in a complex society?
So much food for thought. Thanks for diving deep into this with me today.
Absolutely. Yeah. Until next time, everyone, keep those legal minds sharp.